I'm Tavi Nasir, and this is Leadership Biz Cafe, a podcast that provides insights and tools to help leaders take on the challenges and opportunities found in leading today's workplaces. Leadership Biz Cafe is brought to you by Tavi Nasir Leadership, our leadership firm that offers keynotes and corporate trainings in both in-person and virtual settings that will help you to improve the way you lead and guide your organization's growth and future successes. Now, if you've been enjoying my podcast and the insights and tools I've been sharing on how you can improve your leadership craft, and you're interested in having me expand on them with your team and organization, I'd like to invite you to check out my speaking page on our website at tavernasir.com to learn about some of the topics I can discuss at your upcoming event. And now I'd like to introduce my guest for this episode, Dr. Paul White. Paul is a psychologist, author, and speaker who makes work relationships work. His work has been featured in a number of media outlets, including Business Week, Entrepreneur, Fast Company, and Fortune. Along with Dr. Gary Chapman, Paul is the co-author of the best-selling book, The Five Languages of Appreciation in the Workplace, which has sold over 500,000 copies and has been translated into 25 languages. I've invited Paul to join me on today's show to learn more about these five languages of appreciation and how it can help leaders not just empower their employees, but create a workplace environment where everyone thrives. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the Leadership Biz Cafe.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Before we get into the five languages of appreciation, I want to take a step back here because I think it's important that we have a common frame of reference and understanding of what appreciation in the workplace is and looks like. So to start off our conversation here, Paul, I was wondering if you could explain what's the difference between appreciation and recognition, because I think there's a tendency to view them as being the same thing.
Yeah, you're exactly right. In fact, that's sort of one of the major misconceptions that leaders often have is that they hear appreciation, they sort of automatically think it's, you know, the same thing as employee recognition. And, you know, employee recognition is a good thing when it's designed well and implemented, but it's largely focused on performance, right? And that's sort of the history. It was designed to sort of set goals, monitor those, and then reward and recognize when people, you know, reached or exceeded those goals or did something above and beyond. And that's good. You know, we want people to do the right thing and do it well. But employee recognition is largely organizationally driven. I mean, it's sort of either from the management or from the HR department, and it's pretty much the same thing for everybody. It's public, it's usually words, and you may have a gift along with it. And to be honest, I mean, when I'm out working with and training groups, often there's sort of either a sarcasm or a cynicism about the employee recognition program. It just feels pretty superficial to a lot of people. And for us, appreciation, we often talk about authentic appreciation because not about just trying to get people to look like they appreciate somebody, but really to value and appreciate somebody genuinely. It's more than just about performance. I mean, it can include that for sure, but we really believe, and I think, you know, the past few years have demonstrated this, that, you know, employees are people. And we have lives outside of work. We have characteristics that of value that aren't necessarily directly related to our job description or performance. And that actually helps because there's sometimes that it's hard to or even inappropriate to recognize somebody who's not performing well. Does that mean you don't value them? I think not. And so we try to provide the tool to help people learn how to value and appreciate beyond performance, personal characteristics, and maybe even things outside of work.
I'd like to address another point before we dive deeper into this topic of appreciation in the workplace, and that is the inevitable skepticism some leaders can have about this. And there are two false assumptions you share in your book that I think it's important for us to address here. The first false assumption is that communicating appreciation is about making employees feel good.
Right.
And the second false assumption is that your ability as a leader to communicate appreciation depends on the industry you work in and the kind of work your employees do. So I'd love it, Paul, if you could share here the business case, if you will, for why appreciation is beneficial for any organization, no matter what they do or what industry you're in.
Yeah, sure. And again, you've hit right on sort of a second major misconception leaders have is that, appreciation is about making people feel good. And yeah, we want that to happen, obviously. But really, the goal is to help create an effective, functional, and healthy organization. And sometimes I use the picture of oil in a machine. Oil doesn't really make do the task, but it helps the pieces work together smoothly. And I think appreciation's like that. Without appreciation in the workplace, there's friction, there's heat, maybe sparks sometimes, and things get stuck. And when people feel valued, the organization functions better. And we've got the whole second chapter. In fact, I've just rewritten the book and updated it and got a new version that's coming out this month in January. And that updated the research. We've got over 50 research citations of how when people feel valued, things go better. I mean, your turnover goes down, absenteeism goes down, work conflict goes down, customer satisfaction ratings go up. People like their job more, they're more engaged, all the kinds of positive things. And actually, productivity and profitability go up as well. And so it's not just about the feeling thing, but it's about helping the organization function well. Because one of the things that happens is when people feel valued, a lot of the stupid things that they get sort of bent out of shape about, size of your monitor, whether you're in a parking spot, whatever, sort of float away. Because when people feel valued, those become really non-issues for them. So, yeah, and I guess another part of it, as far as updating a book, is that the prior last version was in 2019, and obviously a lot's happened since then. And so we really address remote and hybrid workers and how this all applies to them as well.
Okay, Paul, so now that we have this clear understanding around appreciation, let's talk about these five languages of appreciation in the workplace. As you write in your book, we all have one of these as our primary appreciation language. And the first appreciation language you write about is called words of affirmation, which a lot of people identify as being their primary appreciation language. In fact, I completed your Motivating by Appreciation inventory, and I found that this is my primary language as well. Now, words of affirmation is the appreciation language where we use words, either verbally or written, to send a positive message to someone. Now, based on that description, I'm sure many listeners are thinking, oh, I express that language regularly. I'm often praising people at work, right?
Right.
But this is why I wanted to start our discussion identifying the difference between recognition and appreciation, as what we're aiming to communicate here is not praise for performance, but praise for personality, for what makes a person who they are. So, Paul, how do we practice this appreciation language for those people who are like me, who have this as their primary language of appreciation?
Yeah, well, one of the major mistakes that we're sort of taught actually along the way is, to tell people they've done a good job, or glad you're part of the team. And actually, we've got 85,000 people on our newsletter list, and we'll do polls occasionally. And we asked people to tell what they don't like to hear from with regards to words, and good job is one of the main ones. And because it's vague, it's pretty generic. It doesn't take any effort or thought, to figure that out, and you can say it to anybody. And so we really teach a model of people, first of all, using another person's name. We like to hear our name. And secondly, if you're writing it, make sure you spell their name correctly, because it doesn't feel real personal if you misspell their name. And then be specific about what you value about them. And so it could be, Benjamin, thanks for staying late and getting all the data in so we would have our report ready for the meeting today. And then the third part is to tell them why it's important, either to you, to your organization, to your clientele. So, Benjamin, thanks for staying late to get the report done, because that way I had some time to look over it this morning prior to the meeting, and didn't feel rushed that way. So the more specific you are, the more likely you're to your communication is going to be viewed as authentic and genuine. The more vague you are, the more likely they're going to say, he's just sort of blowing smoke. So that's a key part. The other part to sort of understand about words is that a lot of people don't like to be praised publicly. In fact, when I go out and do training or speaking, I always ask how people want to be shown praise. And about 40% of the people say, they don't want to be praised in front of other people or clearly in large groups. And so it's important to sometimes, especially when you're starting out, keep it private. And the other part with that is to make sure that it's about what is important to them and what they're actually doing. Sometimes we praise people for things that, yeah, it's true, but that's not really important to them. So it's helpful to try to investigate it and hear how they want to be shown appreciation and for what.
So, Paul, the next appreciation language is called quality time. And this is one of the more interesting languages of appreciation, because at first we might think that if an employee has quality time as their primary appreciation language, that means they want to spend quality time with us as their boss. But as you point out in your book, this can also mean your employees appreciate the opportunity to spend quality time with their colleagues. And this is particularly true for millennial and Gen Z employees. But there's also different variations to how this appreciation language can be expressed so that those who have this as their primary language can feel appreciated. So, Paul, could you walk us through the different variations of this appreciation language and how we can express it?
Yeah, I think you've hit the two major categories that for those of us that are older, I'm a boomer myself, and for us, we sort of grew up professionally wanting time with our supervisor or manager so we could either communicate things or learn from them or just valuing being together with them. And clearly there's a generational difference that as we've over time researched different generational preferences, younger employees clearly like quality time as much as older employees, but it looks very different that they want to hang out with their peers. Their sort of culture is more collegial oriented. And so I've had, administrative assistants say, I like quality time with my peers, but my boss is pretty intense and I'm shy and I really don't want time with them. It sort of stresses me out. So that's an issue. And so I tell older leaders, just sort of like you were inferring, just because they have time as their primary language doesn't mean they want time with you. You may be wonderful, you may be great, but one of the things we found is allowing people to identify the specific actions as well as their language, because and from whom they want it, because you may want to get together and watch sports with some of your colleagues, but you're not going to invite your supervisor. So just knowing their language isn't sufficient. We really try to, through our inventory, help people get the specifics so they can get it right and not waste time and energy doing something that's not meaningful.
And I think there's something reassuring about this too, Paul, because I think for many leaders, the idea that, okay, well, now I have to carve out in my schedule quality time for X number of employees, now this is becoming a challenge, because again, this is something where it's not a task, right? You have to show up and be truly present to do it.
Right.
So I know for some leaders, this could feel like, oh my God, okay, this is going to be a bit of a challenge. But knowing, especially for some of your younger employees, it's not necessarily you. It could just be that they want to have those opportunities to bond with their colleagues.
Right. And sort of a lesson we learned along the way is that whereas recognition really is top down, appreciation is really best demonstrated both by supervisor managers and colleagues, that it's too much weight and responsibility for supervisors and managers to carry themselves. And secondly, team members want to be able to be encouraged and to encourage their colleagues when they're having a tough time. And so in our model and in our training, we include everybody. I mean, we create a group profile of people's results so that everybody on the team can know, how to encourage or show appreciation in the ways that are meaningful to their colleagues and even outside of your department or your team, because maybe somebody in IT helps out somebody in accounting with their, you know, computer program. They don't report to each other, but, you know, it's nice to be able to show appreciation for the help that they demonstrated.
And this actually is a perfect segue to the third appreciation language, which is called acts of service, where we lend a helping hand to our employee as a way to show appreciation. But here again, we have to be mindful of how we approach this appreciation language so that our employee really feels it as a gesture of appreciation and not a comment on their competence. And as I share with my work with leaders, a great way to gain clarity over what your employees want and need is to just ask. And I love in this section of your book, you share three great questions that can help with this appreciation language, where you ask your employee, what would be helpful to you? How would you like the task to be done? And when would be the best time to help? And I think that this is really instructive because, again, as a leader or as even a colleague, you could see someone struggling and you know, you want to help out, but maybe what you see as being help is really a deterrent and is not appreciated by your colleague or by your employee. So taking the time to ask these questions will make sure you're actually giving the person what they need and what they want at that point in time and that they'll really feel appreciated. But in addition to this, what are some other things we need to take into consideration when it comes to speaking this appreciation language?
Yeah, one of the interesting things is that we have this sort of cultural issue. It's true in North America, Europe, and I think other places as well, that if somebody says, you know, would you like some help with that? Or do you need some help? The most common answer is no, I'm good. And so how you frame the question is really important. It's like, what would be helpful to you is not a yes, no question. They can identify what would be helpful, whether or not you provide help or not. But when you get sort of that initial sort of pushback, you say, no, really, I've got some time, I'd like to help out. And it's really not helping a low performing colleague. It's often either that they're in a situation where they're working on a time limited project, they're banging away, and what's something you could do to help? Whether that's, you know, cover their emails or phone calls for a day while it so they can focus on the project, or maybe bring in a meal so they can work at their desk. Or in sort of service oriented situations, like in a doctor's office or whatever, when everybody shows up at the front desk at once, you know, it's like, you know, somebody from the back office could say, hey, what could I do to help out? And it may not be to help with the patients. It may be to answer the phone or to deal with some entry in a computer or whatever. And so we're really, lots of us are okay observers when somebody needs help. We're usually terrible interpreters of what kind of help they need, and it's best to ask them so that, you know, we hit the mark that way.
So, Paul, the next appreciation language is called tangible gifts. And I love how in this chapter you share examples of bad tangible gifts. And I just want to take a moment here to share a few because they really are bad. So one was a photocopied note that says we appreciate you, with a mint tape to it that was handed out for Employee Appreciation Day. Another one was an email sent after convention that said, quote, to show how much we appreciate all of you, there are leftover items in the break room from our booth at the recent convention. Take whatever you like, end quote. Yeah, like saying nobody else wanted this junk, so enjoy.
Exactly.
And hands down, Paul, the worst one of them all, to show appreciation to employees, they were given last year's calendars.
Right.
I'm like, oh my God, this is, and these are all true stories, right? These are not like examples.
Yeah. And I asked the people, I said, what, were the pictures really good or something that they thought there was value there? And it was just like, what's up with this? So yeah, it's crazy what people tell me.
So clearly, when it comes to this appreciation language, we have some work to do, even though it's not the most common primary appreciation language. So what are some things we could do to make this right, Paul?
Well, really, the main thing for tangible gifts is first for leaders to know that it's only 7% of the workforce choose tangible gifts as their primary language. So a lot of reward recognition programs focus on gifts, and people will take it, but it's not going to get you the impact that you're hoping for in the sense of really helping them feel valued or whatever. What we've learned about gifts is that it needs to be personal. This is where the saying, it's the thought that counts, really fits. It's not how much money you spend. It's that you've gotten to know them. And it could be as small as their favorite cup of coffee that you bring in the morning, or tea or whatever, or you bring in a snack that you know that they like, or maybe you find a magazine about their favorite sports team, or even a hobby that, you know, they have. And it can be online too. I mean, you know, there are a lot of resources. Maybe somebody's starting to coach their kid's soccer team and you find a website that's got pretty cool training, you know, videos for training activities for them to use. So it's about the thought and it's person to person. One of the biggest wastes of money is sort of gifts between companies and organizations at the holidays, because you got a fruit basket or whatever shows up, you know, from one of your suppliers. Eh, you're going to eat it, but it doesn't really impact you. It's more important for you to connect with the person and that organization and find out something that they like and give that to them if you want to give a gift. But a lot of money's wasted.
Okay, Paul, so now we come to the last appreciation language. And I have to admit, I'm going to be leaning on you to help us understand this one, as the fifth and final appreciation language is physical touch.
Right.
Now, Gary and you admit in your book that you consider dropping it and focusing only on the first four appreciation languages. But as you point out, there is nonetheless a place for it and that not all touches are equal. So could you explain this appreciation language for our listeners and how it can be appropriately used and expressed in today's workplaces?
Sure. Yeah. And I think there's two sort of major examples. One is, we did not want to advocate for a touchless society, even in the workplace, because there are certain important times and relationships where it can be really valuable, whether that's celebrating, you know, that they just won an award, or maybe their daughter's, you know, expecting a child or just had one, or can be on the flip side, sort of a crisis situation that they just need a little comfort. It's pretty rare, but it happens. And the message, if you don't do touch with, especially culturally, there's differences. I mean, whether you're from sort of a Northern European background or from South America or Southern Europe, that touch is more important. It plays a difference. But really the main issue is that it's spontaneous celebration, right? It's a high five when you finish a project. It's a fist bump when you solve a problem, maybe a congratulatory handshake. So it's not a major issue unless you, you know, create offense. And so that's why we wanted to just sort of address that it's there, but like we don't focus on it in our inventory.
Now, Paul, for those who are wondering how they could figure out what the primary appreciation language of their employees is, one way to do this is by taking your MBA inventory, as I did, to identify mine. But is there a way to figure out the appreciation language if your employees or colleagues don't take this test? What are some things that could help us get a better understanding of what someone else's appreciation language is?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, it's tough. And I'll give you two ways that people try that doesn't work well. And that is to ask somebody, well, okay, if I appreciate you, how should I show that? That's just a weird conversation in our culture. And you're not going to get much information. I mean, it's going to be, I don't know, tell me thanks. And that's about all you get. And secondly, to sort of observe what they do and try to infer from that. First, there's not that many data points that you're seeing appreciation shown. And secondly, people often will show appreciation in ways that are different than what they want to receive, especially for gift givers. People that like to give gifts don't necessarily like to receive them. So all around that, I mean, the one thing that we've come to that can get you going a little bit is to really talk about when you're discouraged, because people often identify with being discouraged at some point, what encourages you? And from my point of view, the five languages can be used in this context, in that appreciation is sort of about the past. You appreciate what people have done. Encouragement is about the present and the future. And so you can say, you know, what, when you're discouraged, what encourages you? And they can say, oh, you know, having somebody invite me to go out and, you know, we go out for a drink, or we watch sports together. Or, you know, I really enjoy comfort food, you know, and you go that route. So that's sort of in the side door, it'll help some, but it's tough because it's not really sort of a common conversation in most of our cultures and relationships.
I also was thinking about something you mentioned, how you're now working on another update to this book, kind of addressing some of the new challenges you see, especially since this one was written in 2019. And one of the ones that comes to my mind is how we are looking at an evolution in the way we work, where we really are going towards a more hybrid style of a work arrangement where people are not all in the office at the same time. Some people are in the office for 3 days out of the week. Sometimes it's not the same days and so forth. So I'm just wondering, given now how we've gone through all these five languages of appreciation, what are some of the challenges you've seen and experienced and had shared with you through the various workshops you've had with organizations? And now with the new data you have, what are the now upcoming challenges that organizations need to prepare for in terms of being able to create a culture of appreciation in their organization?
Yeah. So actually, prior to COVID, we were doing research with remote employees and then continued that through COVID and then post-COVID. And one of the biggest challenges as people work remotely or hybrid is that you don't have as many opportunities to interact with people just sort of spontaneously. I mean, you don't run into them in the hall, you're not walking by their office and you stick your head in or you see them in the break room. And so those are common situations where we sort of touch base and how you doing and what you did this weekend and you connect with them at a personal level. And those have largely diminished in our workday and work week. And so as we've moved to a more remote kind of structure, you have to be proactive. And that's really one of the key things we learned is you have to be proactive to reach out to people and find out what's going on. And it's a second part of that is it's at a personal level. It's not, you know, how are you doing on the project and, you know, did you get this report or whatever, but it's like, you know, who are you rooting for this weekend in the playoffs, you know, or how are your kids doing in soccer or whatever it might be, that you've got to be proactive about it. And I think we've learned that there's a more permeable boundary between work and personal life. I mean, we all have our boundaries there, but it's not like they're totally separate. And that people want to know that you're interested in them, not just in what they do. And sometimes leaders can turn it into sort of 21 questions where the person's being interrogated. And a way around that is to share some about what's going on with you. You know, hey, I'm a Chiefs fan, and you know, I hope they go in the playoffs. I don't know how far they'll go, or you know, I got to go sailing this weekend and it was a lot of fun. And so you sort of share, and that sort of establishes a level of trust of being able to share at that level. So that's a key part. I think a future issue, and actually, I mean, it's present, but it's going to be more important, is how do you stay connected and get connected with people that have come on post-COVID during this remote hybrid time? Onboarding is a huge issue. You know, how do you onboard and how do you help people learn about your culture? Because usually culture is learned through observation of people's behavior. Well, if you're not there to observe it, you got to be more intentional about it. And I think we've learned that sort of our process of helping people learn how to show appreciation to one another really helps with that connectivity and the onboarding process of, okay, what's normative here and feeling connected with your peers.
Yeah, I think this is really an important point because I mentioned at the beginning, you know, when we talk about recognition, that's really about your performance, whereas appreciation is about who you are as a person. And as you pointed out, like if we're not in the office all the time where we can have those spontaneous moments, it's hard then for us to know the person. We can know your performance because we have the data, we can see it in the projects we're working on and so forth. But as you as a person, that's not going to be as apparent. But you know, again, this is one thing I agree with you that it's not a 20 questions type of situation as it is when you have those in between conversations. You know, you're waiting for everyone to jump on the Zoom call. Well, how's everybody's day going? Pay attention to what people are saying. Don't use it as filler conversation because people share clues in those moments. I remember having a number of Zoom calls and we will have the time where we're waiting, we're discussing stuff. A few weeks later, we'll have a follow-up call and I'll ask them, hey, so how did the move go? And they look surprised, like, oh, it went really well, and this, that, and the other. And I could see from their response, especially after reading your book, that I was communicating in their language of appreciation in that moment because they were feeling seen and heard. So I do think it's a learned skill. I think it's something we can certainly learn to do. And so I'm just grateful to hear that your research is reinforcing that fact, because I do think that's going to be a challenge for leaders and employees of how do I make sure I have this culture of appreciation if we're not always having those spontaneous moments we'd have when we go to grab a cup of coffee, we're walking down the hallway and so forth.
Yeah. And let me just add, for like truly virtual teams, people that just everybody works remotely virtually all the time. I think there's going to be a huge sort of rotating and revolving door for companies that don't get their people together in person at least once a year. Because there's some new neuroscience that shows that the kinds of interaction and understanding empathy that occurs when we're face-to-face in person is qualitatively different than face-to-face virtually. And, you know, I don't know if you've had the experience where you've, you know, met somebody online and then you finally meet them in person, you didn't realize how tall or how short they were, you know, or just observing them and interacting in a group setting. It provides a better understanding and connectivity. And so for people that work in totally virtual settings, man, I really think it's going to be important for at least part of the team. If you can't get the whole team, you know, part of the team get together in person once or twice a year. It's going to be a big difference of how well you function and how long people stay on board with you.
Great point there, Paul. Great point. In fact, Paul, this has been a fascinating look at an element of communication that's so often overlooked and discounted. And one reason I think why is because many of us lack a proper understanding of these different languages of appreciation. So when we do try to express appreciation to someone and it falls flat, we just assume expressing appreciation is pointless, when the real issue is we're not speaking that person's language for them to feel the appreciation we're trying to extend. And I think it's important to remember that we do have to take a step back to not see things purely from our vantage point, but to understand what do we need to communicate so that our employees and our colleagues will feel truly appreciated. So I want to thank you, Paul, not only for the wonderful read, but for this insightful conversation that I hope will encourage our listeners to be more curious and open to learning the appreciation language of others, as well as hopefully gaining a better understanding of what their appreciation language is as well.
Well, thank you, Tanvir. And let me just, I'd like to make an offer to your audience that if they'll email me just at yesdrpaul@gmail.com. It's sort of an account I set up. Yesdrpaul, P-A-U-L, at Gmail. I'll send them, and, you know, put the name of the podcast in the subject line. I'll send them both sort of a sample report of our inventory so they can see what that looks like. And also an article, probably a couple articles, one written about us in the New York Times, one in Forbes, BBC News, just so they can see, yeah, this has got some credibility, and be glad to share that with them.
I will definitely include your offer in our show notes for this episode. So thanks again, Paul, for that offer. And again, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation.
Sure. My pleasure. Really enjoyed it.
You can learn more about these five languages of appreciation, as well as how to get that sample MBA inventory and various articles on the importance of appreciation in the workplace from Paul, in the show notes for this episode at tavernnasir.com/LBC. And if you're looking for a leadership expert to speak at your next conference, or if you're looking for someone to facilitate a leadership workshop at your next leadership event, I'd like to invite you to contact me so we can discuss what I can share with your team. Just use the contact form on my website at tavernnasir.com, where you can also find my speaking page to learn more about the topics I can discuss, as well as to see what other leaders have had to say about attending my keynotes and workshops. Now, if you've been enjoying my podcast, I'd like to ask you if you could take a moment here to rate and review my podcast. And while you're at it, why not share this podcast with your colleagues and employees? The easiest way to do this is to simply share a link to our podcast page at tavernnasir.com/LBC, where they'll find links to listen to our show on all the major streaming platforms. I'm Tavernnasir, and you've been listening to Leadership Biz Cafe.